All right, law students, buckle up because today we are diving deep into a Supreme Court case that's going to make you rethink how procedure can really make or break a case.
Oh, yeah. This one is a bit of a head-scratcher.
We're talking about Goldlar Inc. v. Hyman, a 1962 decision that still echoes in courtrooms today. You'll find it at 369 U.S. 463 if you want to follow along.
Always good to have the source material handy.
Now, this case sprung from a private antitrust lawsuit, the kind you see under the Sherman and Clayton Acts, and it all starts with a question that sounds almost impossible. Ready for this? Can a court ship your case off to another state, even if it doesn't have jurisdiction over the defendants?
That does seem like a legal paradox, doesn't it?
It really does, and that's exactly why Goldlar is such a foundational case for anyone trying to master civil procedure.
Absolutely. It gets to the heart of procedural strategy, understanding where a case can be heard, that's venue, and whether the court can actually exert power over the parties involved, personal jurisdiction.
And of course, Goldlar also highlights how the courts try to prevent legitimate claims from getting tossed out just because of a technicality.
Right, because justice delayed is often justice denied, as they say.
So let's break down this legal drama step by step. Our story begins with Goldlar Inc. They filed suit in the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, claiming antitrust violations against several defendants. But here's the catch. Pennsylvania wasn't the right place to sue two of those corporate defendants, according to the Clayton Act's very specific rules about venue.
Oh, so right off the bat, we have a venue problem.
Exactly. These two companies weren't residents of Pennsylvania, couldn't be found there, and weren't doing business there in a way that met the Clayton Act's standards for proper venue.
So what happened? Did the Pennsylvania court just dismiss the case against those two defendants?
You'd think so, right? That's the usual move when venue is wrong. But instead, the court pulled a bit of a legal switcheroo. They decided to transfer the whole case over to the Southern District of New York. And they did this under a specific section of federal law, 28 U.S.C. section 1406A.
Interesting. So they moved the case to a court where venue would be proper. Makes sense on the surface, but didn't you say the Pennsylvania court didn't have personal jurisdiction over those defendants either?
That's the real mind bender here. Because when the case got to New York, the New York courts ended up dismissing it. Their reasoning: the Pennsylvania court never had the authority to hear the case against those defendants in the first place.
So we're back to that initial puzzle. How can a court that lacks jurisdiction over the defendants then transfer the case to another court? It's like trying to send a package to an address you don't even know.
A perfect analogy. And to make sure everyone's following along, let's make sure we're clear on the difference between venue and personal jurisdiction. Any easy way to remember that?
Sure, think of it this way. Venue is where, jurisdiction is who. Venue is all about the geographical location, the right place to file a lawsuit. The Clayton Act, with its focus on antitrust cases, has its own rules about venue, often tying it to where the defendant does business or has an impact.
Right, so venue is about making sure the lawsuit has a connection to the place where it's filed.
Exactly. Personal jurisdiction, on the other hand, is about the court's power over the actual people or companies being sued. Can the court make them show up and be bound by its decisions? Usually, this depends on whether those defendants have some connection to the state where the lawsuit was filed.
So in Goldlar, the Pennsylvania court didn't have personal jurisdiction over those two corporate defendants. But they did have this tool, this section of 1406A, that let them transfer the case. What exactly does this section of the law do?
Well, think of it like a legal safety net. Section 1406A lets a district court move a case to another district or division where it could have been filed originally if the initial venue was wrong. And here's the key phrase: in the interest of justice. So it's not just about correcting a mistake, it's about making sure the plaintiff has a fair shot.
So it sounds like this statute was designed to prevent cases from being completely thrown out just because someone filed in the wrong place.
Exactly. The idea is to allow the case to proceed in the correct court without forcing the plaintiff to start all over again. After all, a simple filing error shouldn't be a death knell for a potentially valid legal claim.
So the big question the Supreme Court had to grapple with in Goldlar was whether a court, without personal jurisdiction, could still use this section 1406A to transfer a case. What did they decide?
They said, yes, a court can absolutely transfer a case under Section 1406A, even if it doesn't have personal jurisdiction over the defendants. And their main reason: to prevent what they called procedural injustice.
So they basically said that sometimes sticking rigidly to jurisdictional rules could lead to an unfair outcome for the plaintiff.
Right. They saw dismissing the case in Pennsylvania as potentially devastating for Goldlar. Remember, before Goldlaw, strict interpretations of jurisdiction often meant that a procedural misstep could completely derail a case, no matter how strong the underlying claim.
It seems like Goldlaw signaled a move towards a more practical, less rigid approach. Substance over form, in a way.
Exactly. They recognize that justice shouldn't be sacrificed just because of a technicality, especially when there's a way to fix the problem.
So let's dig into the majority opinion, written by Justice Black. Why did they come to this conclusion?
Well, they started by looking closely at the language of Section 1406A. They noticed that the statute is worded very broadly and doesn't say anything about the transferring court needing personal jurisdiction. It simply says that a case filed in the wrong place can be moved to a place where it could have been filed correctly.
So they took a very literal interpretation of the statute, no hidden meanings, just what the words actually said.
Exactly. And then they went a step further and looked at the legislative intent behind Section 1406. They pointed out that Congress passed this law to get rid of what they call time-consuming technicalities that could prevent cases from being decided on their merits.
It seems like they saw this statute as a way to make the legal system more efficient and fair, making sure a small procedural error didn't automatically lead to a huge loss for the plaintiff.
Right. And this brings us to the very real impact of dismissing versus transferring the case in Goldlaw. If the Pennsylvania court had simply dismissed the case against those two companies, Goldlaw might have lost their chance to sue altogether.
Because of the statute of limitations, right? That deadline for filing a lawsuit.
Exactly. By allowing the transfer, the court made sure Goldlaw could still have their day in court, even though they made a mistake about where to file.
So the interest of justice idea, built into Section 1406A, was really about preventing a technicality filing in the wrong place from killing a potentially valid claim.
Right. The court basically decided that making sure the plaintiff could get a fair hearing in the right court was more important than strictly enforcing jurisdictional rules in the wrong court.
Now, like many major Supreme Court decisions, Goldlaw had a dissenting opinion. Justice Harlan wasn't convinced by the majority's reasoning. What were his main concerns?
Well, Justice Harlan was worried about the idea of a federal court taking action that could impact a defendant's rights without first having personal jurisdiction over them. He argued that it was unusual and maybe even inappropriate for a court to transfer a case under those circumstances.
So he was concerned about the court overstepping its boundaries, so to speak.
Yes, he felt the majority was stretching Section 1406 too far, and that Congress probably didn't intend for it to be used that way. He thought it would be better for Congress to address this issue, not the courts.
Interesting. So he was more focused on making sure the court stayed within its proper role, even if it meant a less favorable outcome for the plaintiff.
Right. And he also pointed out something else, what he saw as an imbalance in the law. He noted that while Section 1406A helped plaintiffs who filed in the wrong venue, there wasn't a similar rule to help plaintiffs who filed in the right venue, but where the court lacked personal jurisdiction.
Ah, so he was highlighting a potential inconsistency in how the rules dealt with different kinds of procedural errors. A good point.
It does make you think, should there be a similar safety net for plaintiffs who make a mistake about personal jurisdiction, not just venue?
That's a question worth pondering. But getting back to Goldlaw, what lasting impact has this decision had on how federal courts handle procedural errors related to venue?
Goldlaw has had a huge impact. It led to a much broader use of Section 1406A. After Goldlaw, courts became more willing to transfer cases that were filed in the wrong venue, even without personal jurisdiction. The goal was to promote efficiency and make sure cases could be resolved in the right place without unnecessary delays and expenses.
So it shifted the focus away from punishing procedural mistakes and towards making sure cases were decided on their merits.
Exactly. I've seen Goldlaw cited in numerous cases where a plaintiff made a mistake about venue. The courts have consistently used it to ensure fairness and prevent cases from being thrown out on a technicality.
And for our law student listeners, what are the key takeaways from Goldlaw as they learn about civil procedure? What practical advice can we give them based on this case?
I'd say the biggest lesson is that even though it's crucial to choose the right venue when filing a lawsuit, a mistake isn't necessarily the end of the world. Section 1406A provides a way to fix the problem and keep the case moving forward.
So it's like a second chance for plaintiffs who make a venue mistake.
Mm.
But they need to be aware of it and know how to use it effectively.
Right. And understanding how statutes of limitations and transfer rules work together is super important for any litigator. Knowing that a transfer might be possible can change how you approach deadlines and respond to challenges about venue.
Couldn't agree more. And speaking of different transfer statutes, just to clear up any confusion, could you quickly explain the difference between Section 1406A, which we've been talking about, and Section 1404A? They both involve transferring cases, but there's a key distinction.
You got it. Section 1406 is specifically for when the original venue was wrong. It's about fixing a mistake in where the case was filed. Section 1404A, on the other hand, applies when the original venue is actually correct. It lets a court transfer the case to a different venue that's also proper, but for reasons of convenience for the parties and witnesses.
So Section 1406A is about correcting an error, while Section 1404A is about finding a better, more convenient forum for a case that's already in the right place.
Exactly. Two different tools for different situations.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into Gold Law or Inke v. Hyman, we see a Supreme Court decision that took a practical approach to procedural errors, choosing fairness and efficiency over rigid adherence to jurisdiction in certain situations. It's a great example of how the law tries to balance following the rules with achieving a just outcome.
It really highlights that ongoing tension in the legal system, doesn't it? The desire to have clear rules and procedures, but also the recognition that sometimes those rules need to bend a little to ensure a just result.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And for our listeners out there, as you continue your journey through law school and into practice, remember the lesson of Gold Law. A wrong venue doesn't always mean game over. This case proves that the law has ways to get things back on track and make sure justice is served.
It's all about knowing the rules of the game. And Gold Law definitely added a new play to the playbook.
Well said. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into a truly fascinating case.
You bet. Always a pleasure to dissect a legal puzzle like this.
Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.
And remember, folks, procedure matters.
Absolutely.